Okay, do you want to talk into the mic? You gotta be
hello.
Still gotta be like really close to it, but it seems to be fine. You can keep an eye on it. Do you have your headphones?
Oh yes, of course I have my headphones.
I'm gonna check on it.
Yes.
I need a pop culture moment.
Yeah, we gotta get started because Rachel said she's on a walk with Leora.
Leora.
Cool.
Do you have a pop culture moment? Because I don't.
I do.
What if you have the same one? Wouldn't that be crazy?
That would be crazy. This is not my thing with my pop culture moments. Here we go. Okay, I've got one.
Okay, you can introduce yourself.
Can you put your phone on silent, please?
My phone is on silent. It's just not on do not disturb.
Okay, well, I meant do not disturb.
Atheists.
Okay.
You don't understand that reference?
No, actually, I don't. Do you want to explain it? No. Or just leave everyone in suspense? Okay, great. I'm Valerie, and this week I am the vine. Look at all these chickens.
Nice. It's a good one. It's
classic.
A good vine. One of my favorites, probably.
Oh, one of the best of all time.
My absolute favorite, which is like an underrated gem that no one has ever seen before, is Ay Mi Chicle.
Mm-mm.
You haven't seen Ay Mi Chicle? Should we take the time that we'll then
do it.
Just
let's
cut
do it.
Out? They'll never know the difference.
We'll just cut out us watching the video and we'll leave in our reactions.
Ay Mi Chicle.
That's what we do for all y'all.
An absolute classic. Can you see?
Yes.
I really didn't understand what you were saying until I saw the video. Now it makes
it
sense.
It is so funny.
We've all had that experience of gum falling out of our mouth.
But it cracks me up. The way she switches, like...
Ay mi chicle.
Everything. Google it. It's funny. It's just... It's my favorite one, I think.
Cute.
Yeah. Hi, my name's Shoshana. And my pop culture moment for this week, because of the media we're watching... is Alison Stoner dancing to Missy Elliott in the early 2000s.
Okay. Yeah. You have to show it to me.
Bro, there's no way you don't know this.
Just show it to me.
This is like,
we have to watch it. It's
she's
just
like, you know, like when everyone talks about like Missy Elliott, like little girl dancing? That's Alison Stoner.
You need to show it to me.
And then she redid it like 2 years ago or last year or something. Stoner, Missy Elliott.
Stoner.
It's in the Work It music video, no? Do you want to pause it so future Valerie doesn't have to cut out 4 minutes of us watching a music video?
No, you don't think that we... You don't know when it is?
Sorry, Missy, we gotta skip through this stuff. I feel like you could have just looked up her part specifically.
I googled it and it didn't come up. Oh, yeah. Her, the one in the white.
Oh my god, so funny.
She's like a classic early 2000s actress.
Yeah, she was in Camp Rock. She's great. And then she did a tribute on her YouTube channel 6 years ago.
Cute.
And then a couple of years ago, she danced again, like at the VMAs or something.
Yeah.
It was great.
What was I going to say?
So that's my pop culture moment.
Was it her that was like, everybody like, there, like so many people have been like, she was my queer awakening.
Yeah.
And she was like, how come nobody told me? That's exactly what Yarden says about like when she discovered that she likes women. She was like, all of my friends knew.
That's really funny. Alison Stoner. Also, she came out in an interview, she wrote an essay for Teen Vogue, and it had like the most, like the gayest, it was so gay, when she met this woman, mm-hmm. and she like never met her before, and like hung out with her a bunch, and like was like mesmerized by her, and then this is the line, she goes, I left the workshop and texted my mother and best friend saying, I met a woman today. I'm not sure who she is or what I'm feeling, but I think she's going to be in my life for a very long time.
Gay.
Isn't that the gayest shit you ever heard? Isn't that like a bloody rainbow?
That's funny.
But it's just like the most classic of like, it's a great essay too. Highly recommend it.
Cool. Yeah. Okay.
Also, like, not to spoil what movie we're doing, but like, she gets called Butch. Her nickname in this movie is Butch.
Is it?
Yeah. Like once or twice, Hilary Duff calls her Butch.
I mean, Hilary Duff would. Hilary Duff's Duff character. Would. No, not Hilary Duff. I don't know.
Hilary Duff would use a slur. Yeah, for sure.
No. Hilary, I didn't say that. Miss Duff.
Miss Duff. Okay, so this week's Parsha. Is Parshat Ki Tisa. Should we explain, like, that it's not really this week?
Yeah, we're recording this episode. So if, like, something crazy has happened, if the world has ended.
Yeah, if you're wondering why, like, we haven't addressed the fact that Betty White came back to life, maybe, the week that this Parsha is. So we're recording this several weeks early because we're both not going to be in the same place for, like, a large chunk of time. And rather than trying to record, like, over Zoom, we were on break this week and spent a large chunk of our break
watching
film and TV and then also recording a podcast. So it's currently January and we're recording Ki Tisa.
I also totally confused Yarden about like how many parshiot were left in Shmot. She was like, wait, so we only have like, I was like, we only have like four left. And then, I was just like so confused.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so we're talking about Parshat Ki Tisa today. It starts off, the people of Israel are told to give a half shekel of silver to the Mishkan to be built. And we're also given the instructions of how to make like the water basin and the different oils they use for anointing and the different incenses they use. And then what happens is two people are put in charge of building and like making all of the things for the Mishkan. And those people are Bezalel and Oholiab, whose name I can never say because it is always just like so wildly differently transliterated every time you see it written down. But it's Oholiab. And so they're put in charge of building it and like making all of the stuff. And then randomly we're also reminded that we have to keep Shabbos because we know that a lot of the things that we can't do on Shabbos come from the building of the Mishkan. Great. Then Moshe comes back down the mountain.
I have something to say about that, but I can say it later.
You can say it now.
Well,
when have you ever politely asked to like not interrupt me during a Parsha summary?
I'm trying something new. We're all learning and growing. Last episode, you like multiple times were like, I was in the middle of a sentence, but you interrupt me all the time too.
Yeah, it's called non-linear conversation having.
Yeah.
It's because I'm the youngest sibling and my best friend, Sarah.
Heard of her.
Yeah. So Sarah and her family are like impossible to... I don't think she listens to this. Her husband does. Anyway, her family is like impossible to talk to because they're always like shouting over each other and like talking over each other and talking a million miles an hour. And genuinely, I think after like spending, you know, like 5-6 years being like really, really good friends with her, I do the same. I've always talked fast, but like I've never interrupted people.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sarah, for that annoying habit. Anyway, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, Michael Hatton has a shiur about exactly what you just said, about the juxtaposition of like Bezalel and the Mishkan and Shabbat, and that the things that are listed as like malacha, as like the things you aren't allowed to do on Shabbat, are like directly parallel to the things that Bezalel does to like create things for the Mishkan, right? Like creating thread and weaving and... cutting and I don't know, whatever, all the things.
Threshing.
And so then he also talks about this idea of like God paused creation or like finished creation in order to observe Shabbat. And in the same way, like that we can think of creation of arts in the same way, that like that creative inclination is a partnership between humans and the divine. And that there's like, yeah, this framework of like, what is creation? And it just changes, like, I think what you think about it as like, what is malacha on Shabbat?
Wait, were you in his winter learning intensive or you've heard this before?
I've heard this before.
Oh, cause I like sat in that shiur that he gave during the winter learning intensive. Yeah, he's like defining the difference between the word like malacha, like because we usually say it's work.
Yeah.
And we imagine it's like going to work and it's like building and construction, whatever it is. But he says, no, we have a word for that, avodah.
Right.
That's work. And like that's where we get the word eved, which is like slave. And that's like physical toiling labor. And that's why he draws the distinction. The really interesting thing is that he connected it to Shemitah in our, in like the one that he gave the other week, and says that like the thing that leads to destruction is like when you don't take that break is like creation without end. And so like the constantly creating. And I think it's really like an interesting metaphor for like burnout, right?
Totally.
like writer's block when you've been writing so much and then you just can't get anything out. And like this idea of, or like, I don't know what artists have. They have drawing block.
Yeah, something like
back
that.
Back to the drawing block. But yeah, just this idea of we have to rest from creation sometimes.
You're already coughing and we're, what, 10 minutes into recording a podcast?
None of my liquids have helped and my water's on the other side of my bag and I don't want to rustle the things around.
Actually,
it.
Dairy is DAFCO, what you're not supposed to...
Shoshana
drinks a coffee and a milky coffee and a yogurt.
Are you my mother? Don't drink milk when you have a phlegmy throat.
It's more like voice best practices for taking care of your voice. Oh my God, when I was in college, we were in suites. And so like the suite next door to us was like a group of boys. And so we used to like hang out with them a lot. And one of them was in a play and he spent weeks and weeks talking about this play. And so we all went to see it and he like didn't eat dairy for like a week beforehand and was like doing all these things with his voice. Da, da, da. We went, he literally had one line in the play. It was so fucking funny. Oh my God. It was like, he made such a big deal and we all went to see him and then he was like barely in it. And we were like,
so stupid.
What are we doing here? But anyway, ever since then, I've been like, no dairy before.
Yeah. But you know what? It's delicious. And I'm on antibiotics and I need probiotics.
It's true.
So I need yogurt.
Mm-hmm.
My God. Get off my back.
Mm-hmm.
I have my reasons for the dairy.
Mm-hmm. You know another way to replenish the good bacteria in your gut?
Yakult.
What?
Yakult, like the little probiotic drinks.
No, I was going to say a fecal transplant. You know, that's what they do.
What?
That's what they do.
Why would you say that to my face? I'm sitting here, I'm talking about yogurts, and you bring up fecal transplants.
They give you a little pill of somebody else's poop.
No, I'd rather cough to death.
I know.
Would
you really? No.
No, I wouldn't really. Anyway, so then
okay.
Moshe's coming down from Har Sinai. speaking of fecal transplants, Moshe.
Oh my God, that's horrible.
He's coming down from Har Sinai because he's like received the commandments and the tablets. But he came down late.
Speaking of shit, the Ten Commandments.
Well, it's about to hit the fan. but he's late. Like the Israelites miscount when he's supposed to come down from Har Sinai after the 40 days. And then like... it's like a day too late and they're like, well, guess we better start worshiping a different god. And then they build a golden calf and they worship it. And then Moshe comes down the mountain. He's like, I wonder why everyone's dancing and laughing and having such a good time without me. And then bam, it's idol worship. And then God like wants to destroy the nation, but Moshe...
Yeah, wouldn't you?
Moshe intercedes on his behalf.
God literally gives them one thing. God is like, hey, don't
first
worship
first of all,
other
God
gods.
God gave them 10 things.
Right,
and they did
gotten
such
those
a good
yet.
Job at like not breaking Shabbos, probably, and honoring their parents, probably, and
not
killing, probably. Like, was there murder and kidnapping and incest during those that one day?
Probably.
They broke one out of 10 is not a bad thing. Anyway.
You're right. 9 out of 10 is still 90%.
Yeah. No, they got 90% of it right. So they come down the mountain and then like God, like the main culprits are killed. Moshe destroys the golden calf. He destroys
3,000 people are killed.
Yeah, there's like the main culprits.
The main 3,000 people.
Yeah, it's a mob mentality, bro. It's not just one person being like, we love cows. It's
what about tshuva? Like, what about...
So that's the thing is that like God says... We can start again, Moshe. You, me, we'll make a new nation. And Moshe says, if you don't forgive these people, you can just take my name out of the book. Just erase it. This book you're writing, this weird fantasy series, take me out of it. The Game of Thrones, without me. And then God's like, fine. So he forgives them, but he says that, like, you know, it's not the end and this will come back to bite you in the butt. And then this is a really interesting part. God like says, maybe I'll send an angel instead to get them to Israel and I won't go really along with them. But then Moshe's like, no, like, God, you have to come take us there. And God's like, all right, you make a good argument. And then Moshe makes a new set of tablets and he goes back up the mountain. And God reinscribes the Ten Commandments on the tablets.
Wait, God does the inscribing? I thought Moshe did the second set of inscribing.
I'm just on Chabad.org's Kitisa in a nutshell. So
we all see Chabad's there. What's the word I'm looking for? What they're trying to do.
They're just trying to teach us Torah. Anyway, and then Moshe, this is the first parasha. We have the 13 attributes of mercy. Of God, Moshe uses for God. And then when Moshe comes back down the mountain, his face is so bright after seeing the face of God that people are like, bro, like, don't look at me.
Yeah.
So he has to wear a veil all the time and he only takes it off when he's speaking either to God or like teaching the people or like passing along God's word. Otherwise, he's just wearing like a mask for the rest of his life.
Right. I thought that, and that's really interesting too, because I feel like that's not something that's in like artistic representations of how Moshe looks, which is really interesting. And then also, is this the parsha where it says like, because God and Moshe would sit down and talk face to face, man to man, but then in the same one, is this parsha or the following parsha?
Let me pull up Safari.
Because then there's also this conversation. It's like that then this is where Moshe is like, can I see your face? And God is like, no, you can see my back because like.
Right.
But then it's funny that like really like a few verses before that. But now I can't remember. I've read so many Parshiot.
Yeah, I know. It's been like a wild day of just watched so many movies and reading so many things about the Parsha.
Well, also, whatever, we'll talk about this later.
So what happened
Shoshana made me watch the most boring movie of all time.
What movie? Oh, 2001.
2001 Space Odyssey. That movie.
This is the parsha. So when it talks about like the light coming off of Moshe's face.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It uses Karan.
Yes, I was right.
Karan or.
Yeah.
Which are like beams of light, mm-hmm. which is what it should be translated as. But Karan.
Oh, but then that's when people say horns.
Yeah. Karan is also a translation for horn, which is why you see a lot of depictions of Moshe with like actual physical horns mm-hmm. and why you have the anti-Semitic
trope of like Jews have horns,
which is crazy.
But it's funny because, like, in the same text, it says that his face was shining so bright. Like, it doesn't, whatever.
Well, no, it uses it a couple of times of Karan Or. Like, that's what it means for, like, the shining bright.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, I just think it's interesting that it says they sit down and speak face to face. But, like, how are they speaking face to face if Moshe isn't seeing God's face?
It's true. Is this the one where it talks about Panim El Panim?
I think so, yeah.
I don't know.
Anyway, correct us if we're wrong. we won't remember recording this when it comes out.
That's the parsha.
That's the parsha.
And that's the parsha.
Great. So this week we watched.
Wait, that's what I was gonna say. You said how like you don't really see in artistic representations that like Moshe's face is covered, but one, we see the horns in a lot of things.
Yeah.
Two, I feel like most of the famous depictions of Moshe are ones of him like getting the tablets or splitting the sea, so it comes before the veil.
Mm-hmm.
The only one that I can think of that I've seen that isn't that is like there's a really like a beautiful painting of him with Tzipora and his face isn't covered.
Mm.
It's by some Dutch artist. It's on Al HaTorah, I'm pretty sure I've seen it.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I will say is that in the Ten Commandments movie, they do a really good job, I think, of like sort of semi doing this, but not in this part of it. When Moshe like sees the burning bush and then comes back down, they like splay his hair back, and like and the look of like splendor and like glory on his face is like it's fantastic acting.
Yeah,
and like that's what I think when I think about like Moshe's face is too radiant. I think of that scene in Ten Commandments.
Yeah. I guess I'll have to watch the whole movie at some point and not on.
I saw it once
board.
As a kid because I was on like TCM, like the classic movie channel, and never again. It was long and boring.
Yeah. Oh my God, Howard loves it.
Yeah, he would.
Jesus. Very in line with his personality. Okay, this week for our cultural comparison, we chose, well, Shoshana chose Cheaper by the Dozen.
Yeah, I did. The obvious choice for a parsha about destroying idols and building a mishkan.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. 2003 American family comedy directed by Sean Levy. Sean Levy? And stars Steve Martin and Bonnie Hunt. The film was released on December 25th, 2003. Oh, it's a Christmas movie.
Nice.
With his wife doing a book tour, a father of 12 must handle a new job and his unstable brood.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
it's not just about that. It's also about they've just moved towns for the first time. He takes a big job at like a big a big college football team.
Right.
And then right after that, she has to go on tour. Their life is just thrown into the air because they're both seeking career moves and changes. And like, how do they keep that big family feel?
Yeah.
In a big town where no one wants to be because all of the kids want to stay home.
Right. I just have to say, it says on the Cheaper by the Dozen Wikipedia page that it's a remake of a 1950 film. I haven't seen the 1950 version. Have you?
I haven't seen it. It's also originally a book.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. As I read the book, it says both it's films like were inspired by the real life Gilbreth family. No, it's not German. They're American.
Because Parent Trap is German.
And it's semi-autobiographical account of their lives as written by two of the children of the family. And the book is really good. And this movie is... I don't like this movie.
You don't like the movie?
No, I don't like it. I'll just say it right now. But it's because like I read the book as a child and it's such a good book.
Never
like,
read it.
It's really, really interesting. The dad is actually... He's not a football coach. Lame. He's an efficiency expert, so he like goes into factories and like helps make the factories more efficient by like eliminating certain steps. But then
that's
it like
basically
translates.
A football coach.
In no world is it basically a football
coach.
Yeah,
a football coach goes in and makes the team more efficient and runs plays to make them work properly.
I'm rolling my eyes. Anyway, and then that translates into at home, like he wants them to like learn German. So he buys them like a German record that they're supposed to listen to while they're in the bath. And then they're like, well, how do we like flip over the record if we're in the bath? And he's like, you shouldn't have to flip over the record. So then he teaches them all like how to take a bath in the most efficient way. Anyway, it just makes more sense when it's like he has 12 children. He's an efficiency expert. He's like very focused on.
I don't like that. The whole point of having 12 kids is that your house is supposed to be a mess and you can't do anything.
Well, no, but in the book, then it turns out that he has some like a heart problem or like he like dies young.
What?
Yeah.
This is the most depressing book ever.
But then because
there's no football. And he dies, and the kids have to take short baths, and they have to learn German. Oh, this sounds like the worst book.
It's an excellent book. I highly recommend it. Shoshana's just being mean to me.
It sounds crap.
It's a really good book, and it's just like the movie is just, I mean, I get it. Like, this is more. I just thought the movie is kind of boring. It's just kind of boring.
Shut your face.
Yarden loved it.
Yeah, because it's a good movie. She has good taste.
Yarden came up to Shoshana at something we were at and was like, hey, thanks for, like, I really enjoyed watching this movie. Thanks for making Valerie watch it for
the podcast.
Best
part was that she came up to me at a hunger strike.
Yes.
But thank God it's over.
Yeah.
Thank God the hunger strike is over.
Our friend David Ben Moshe wasn't being given our friend.
At the strike.
I've met him a couple of times. Anyway, he's a lovely man, and he was being denied ability to make aliyah, basically because of racism.
Yeah, it's racism.
And
it was affecting his family, and it was horrible. And he went on strike, and we went and supported him.
Right. It's like all the things that people complain about Israeli bureaucracy, but Israeli bureaucracy was being used as a tool to like keep him from being able to like. Realize these rights like he anyway
So cheaper by the dozen
anyway.
it's great. Like, it's one of those movies like it's fun. Like, I watched it as a child and I liked it, and when I watch it now, like, it's barely nostalgia telling me that it's a fun movie. It's fun.
I think like conceptually it's like a fun idea. Like, it's fun to like imagine having a bunch of siblings and like causing a ruckus.
Oh, no, that
and like
always gives me stress. I feel like this movie for me is the way that like middle-aged women watch Nancy Meyers movies, in that the architecture in this film, that house that they move into.
Yeah, it's super
my
cool.
Dream house. As a child, I was like, I need to live there. I need to go to there. and live there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and when what's his name discovers all the little hidden tunnels.
Mark. You're going to forget the kid who runs away because everyone forgets that he exists.
Yeah.
Mark.
Yeah.
Mark. Mark. It's great. Oh, it's like such a lovely house.
Even it's a good house.
Even the old house is like really cute. It's just like cramped and old.
Yeah.
So I feel like that for me, I want to be in that house.
And that's why you like watching the movie.
I feel like that's part of it. It's fun. Like all of the kids are really cute and they all like most of them have distinct personality and character except couple towards the end.
No, I mean, okay, first of all.
No, the only two that really don't have actual character are like the kid who plays the oboe and the kid who skateboards.
Right,
and their entire personalities are oboe and skateboards, respectively.
But even Hilary Duff, her personality is that she likes clothes and fashion and cares about how she looks.
Have you seen Lizzie McGuire? Have you seen anything that Hilary Duff is in? Who she is. She was in a movie called Material Girls. that's literally who she is.
Don't yell at me.
and then Tom Welling's character is, I love my girlfriend and I want to stay at home in our hometown. And then
two of the twins, their only personalities that apparently they're supposed to be super smart.
Their personalities, they're smarter than everyone else in the house. And then the younger twins is their personality is mischievous. And right. then, which is the only thing they played. They're also in Desperate Housewives, which I started watching again. And they're the same characters in that movie, in that show.
Right.
And then you've got Alison Stoner, who's like an evil mastermind.
Right.
And then you've got Piper Parabo, who's like, I want to be out of this family and living with Ashton Kutcher, my boyfriend who sucks.
Yeah.
And then there's just a couple right. in the middle who get lost. Oboe kid, skateboarding kid. I think that's it.
Yeah.
Listen. And Mark. And Mark's whole thing is that he
loves his frog.
He has a frog and he has red hair and they call him FedEx because the FedEx guy dropped him off.
Aww.
But also, and here's the one thing about this movie that I'm like, I've thought this my whole life. Why would you have two kids and name one of them Mark and one of them Mike? That's just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. Make it make sense.
I mean, Mark and Mike sound more similar in your accent. But
even in your accent, say Mark.
Mark.
Say Mike.
Mike.
That's the same name.
No, they're not.
You said the same thing twice.
Anyway, listen, I like, whatever, I get what the movie is doing. Like, it's just supposed to be kind of being, like a silly
being
movie.
Wonderful. That's what it's being.
The only point that I liked was when Steve Martin is like, I wish I could just harness that evil energy. Yeah. Like, yeah. Also, that you would have 12 children and a dog is insane. That you would
they
also have a
country.
Dog. Yeah, okay.
You're a hater. You're a hater. I don't like it.
Anyway, I also just don't like the bumbling father trope.
Oh, but that's in anything. And it's from 2003. Like, I forgive them for that.
I don't know.
And then it's very heartfelt at the end because Mark goes missing. And then you've got the family next door with Beans from Even Stevens. And his dad's a nice dad and his mum's a bitch. And they help them find them because they're nice people.
Yeah.
And then Nora breaks up with Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
I do
you
like...
You didn't like the apple schmear scene with the dog and the underwear and the thing and the thing and then the dog's attacking?
Wait, you... Okay. You're asking me if I like the scene where they literally make a joke so a dog can bite Ashton Kutcher's crotch?
No. They come up with an entire mastermind plan for the neighborhood dogs to attack their sister's boyfriend who they didn't like.
Okay, but also the idea that you would soak somebody's underwear in meat juice
yes.
and then they would just put it on and be like, great, love
yes.
it. No.
Yes.
He would smell it. If the dog, he would be able to smell it. Oh my God. It's just like when...
Genius.
It's
so good. And then Mark gets the beans a snake for his birthday.
That part is funny.
And then all of the football players come in and help him. And when all of the football players come home, because he's like, we need to make a difference, and so I have to be home more, so I'm going to bring work home with me.
Yeah.
And then Hilary Duff comes to the top of the stairs with, a full-on face mask, and then she's like, in, the classic Hilary Duff, shocked thing. Oh.
Yeah.
Valerie, this movie's so good.
It's not.
Valerie!
I will never.
This movie's so good!
I will never watch it again.
You know what sucks? Cheaper by the Dozen 2. That sucks. You know what doesn't suck? Cheaper by the Dozen 1.
I can't get over that the book is truly a really good book.
I don't believe it. Everything you described to me about that book is the most boring thing. The dad inspects factories to make them work better.
It's good.
The dad makes them learn German. They have to take short baths. And the dad dies really young.
I don't know what to say. It does sound boring when you say it like that.
It doesn't sound boring. It sounds like sad and gross.
No, it's a good book. It's a good book. Now I'm rolling my eyes. It's very much about like the 50s and like the type of... And like the cheaper by the dozen, they also don't even...
In 50s with 12 kids, they're all racist.
For sure they're all racist. Whatever.
Oh, you want me to watch... You want me to enjoy racism, Valerie?
What? Is there a single black person in this movie who's not on the football team? Okay, point made. Okay, but
Oprah's
joke,
mentioned.
The joke.
Oprah mentioned
is
once.
Mentioned?
And also Bonnie's friend, who is the book publisher, is black, I'm pretty sure.
Fine.
Checkmate, atheists.
You don't even know her name, though.
No.
What was I going to say? Because the whole joke in the book with the cheaper by the dozen is because he... literally, like, he will try to get discounts because he'll like come. Oh, and it's like this thing about how like the father can read like who anybody else is, so it's like they'll go to the circus together as a family and he'll be able to tell that the guy working at the booth is an Irishman. He's like, oh, do my Irishmen come cheaper by the dozen? And usually people are like so charmed by that they like give him a discount so that he doesn't have to pay for all 12 of them. But he like the cheaper by the dozen thing like comes up, like he uses that. Anyway, it's a good book. I would recommend it to people who aren't haters like Shoshana.
You're a hater.
You
know what else sucks? Yours, Mine, and Ours, which is like the movie that was trying to be Cheaper by the Dozen and had Drake Bell and Miranda Cosgrove in it, but that sucked. And Dennis Quaid was in it.
Hmm. Yeah, it doesn't sound like a very good movie. Anyway, should so we... the parallels that we drew.
Anyway.
Is about like people, like all the Jewish people contribute half a shekel of silver. It's teamwork makes the dream work. And the same with like, the attempt in Cheaper by the Dozen.
Well, the parsha thing is like everyone has to contribute to the building of the Mishkan.
Yeah.
And this isn't the first time we see it. It happens later on as well. But like the building of this communal space is, are you finished checking your phone?
Yeah, you're done. Send me a picture of a cat.
Oh my God. The building of this communal space falls on the shoulders of everyone.
Right.
Yes. Do you want to say the parallel?
Oh, the parallel is when everybody's making breakfast together, they all do what they have to do to help. It's supposed to be like a well-oiled machine, but then the frog falls in the eggs.
Yeah, it's like everyone has a job. Everyone has to make sure that it works solidly. And it's like, and it works, right? In before they move. You have the idea that they have a well-oiled life. Like, Bonnie right. Hunt has everything together. She knows exactly what's happening. All the kids help make breakfast. The young twins feed the dog.
Right.
It's like everyone, it falls on it. It's a communal responsibility of making the house function smoothly.
Sure. Same with Israeli people contributing. Yeah. And then we've got the water basin anointing oils, which Shoshana has compared
to soaking undies in the meat, but also apple schmear and family ritual. Apple schmear in this thing is like a dumb game where he throws apples at them and then like, or they like lob apples at him like baseball style, and then he hits it with a tennis racket.
But then the apples explode.
And they explode. But it's like presented as like this really fun family tradition and like family ritual that they do every year, and it makes right. Nora really excited. And then I just compare that to religious ritual and like the idea of like the water basin, and like we have all of these different things that are like strange but come together for
right
for religious ritual as opposed to familial ritual.
Sure.
Also, wait, can I say something?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that the way you say undies in like Hindi is chuddies.
Interesting.
And I just really like the word chuddies because they sound like, it sounds like Australian slang, but it's not. Uh-huh. It's like Indian slang.
That is funny.
And as far as I know, it's like Indians like 50s slang because my older Indian friend taught me that word.
Interesting. So maybe it's out of style now.
Could be. He could be lying straight to my face.
Probably. That
but
seems
I really
likely.
Like the word chuddies.
Okay. I won't personally be adding it to my lexicon, but
how do you say undies? Underwear?
Yeah.
You don't call them undies at all?
No, I think I just refer to it as underwear.
Well, Americans disappoint me on a daily basis. Undies. Have you never called them undies?
Sure.
But like you don't call them undies on a regular basis?
No.
That's so weird.
Why?
Underwear is so formal.
My cousin who just came and had a sleepover.
Sruli.
He always calls the bathroom the washroom. I'm pretty sure they also call, like, they use the word cutlery instead of utensils. Like, once I was like, let's get the utensils. And they were like, what's that?
No, we call it cutlery.
Yeah.
I will say that in Yiddish, bathroom is a waschzimmer, which is just wash. Zimmer is room.
Yeah.
Wash. And in Canada, everywhere it says WC, like in all of the public bathrooms.
Like water closet.
That makes no sense to me. Get out of here, Canada.
It makes a ton of sense.
Water closet makes no sense to me.
It's like a little room where water is piped in.
Water can be in every room if you set your mind to it.
Sure. But a specific... So then
you call the kitchen the water room because it's a bigger room with water in it?
No, because is that the defining feature of the kitchen?
Yeah, the sink. No. Literally everything.
The sink
but
is not...
Everything but the kitchen sink is the
just
sink.
Because it's a phrase is not... Because it's saying the kitchen sink is not important.
No. Valerie.
The most important part
Valerie,
of the...
Valerie.
The, like, Valerie. You could have one sink in your house that's in the bathroom and you could just have, like, a hot plate in the kitchen. But, like,
that's disgusting
what makes the
horrible.
Kitchen? Well, I'm not judging the way other people live.
No, Valerie. When you move into a shell of a house... Right? Nothing's in the house. What room do you decide to put the kitchen in?
The one that has the refrigerator.
No, there's nothing. You have the refrigerator. What room do you put the fridge in?
Whatever room is designated. The one that has the gas hookup. The one that has the hookup.
The one that has the sink.
No, there are many
rooms. The one that has the sink.
Oh my God.
The room that is not tiled that has the sink.
What do you mean it's not tiled?
Because when it's tiled, because like the bathroom usually already has a toilet that's like already put in and it's a tiled floor and it's a bathtub and the shower. Like that stuff's already in the room. The other room with the sink is always...
It could be the garage.
No!
You know, you have like an outdoor sink.
Oh my God.
Valerie. The sink is not the defining feature of the kitchen and I will die on that hill.
When you take everything out of the kitchen... The sink is all that's left.
Right, because those things are important to take with you. I can't believe you're mad at me about this. Anyway, our next parallel.
I'm mad.
Shoshana's pissed.
Our next parallel.
Because I won't say that the sink is the most important part of the kitchen.
Betzalel and Ahaliyav are put in charge of building the Mishkan.
I said this is like the same as like the discussion of like who is in charge in the house, right? Of like, is it dad? Can dad do it? Can mom do it? Is Nora going to come help? Like there's this question of like who has the right skills for the job.
Right. Also like the outsourcing of help, I guess. Like the second that the mom leaves, the dad calls the older sister back in for help.
Right.
But yeah. And then, okay, so this next one is the real reason that I suggested this.
Okay.
It's because the meat of this parsha is that Moshe comes back down Har Sinai.
The raw meat-soaked underwear.
Exactly. The meat-soaked chuddies of this week's parsha.
That's disgusting.
You didn't like that phrase?
No, I didn't like it at all.
Moshe comes down and like the people are worshiping the golden calf and it's really bad, right? Like they've just like witnessed... They've just experienced the divine of God, and then they just, like, the mm-hmm, second mm-hmm. things go slightly wrong. That's, like, the main part. And the reason I suggested this movie is because so much of the movie's premise relies on the fact that, like, Bonnie Hunt goes on a book tour and thinks that everything's fine. Because she's always like, call me if something's wrong. But then Tom, like, never calls her because this is her big chance to have a book and, you know, whirlwind tour and make money and have a career. And the only time she realizes that things are bad is when she's on a radio talk show and her kids call in and ask her to come home.
Yeah, bizarre.
Which is just like, and she didn't know before then because like he's hiding it from her really well. So just like for her to walk back into the house and it's not even just like physical disaster because they can clean that up, but it's like the emotional toll of the family at this point right. in the movie is like everyone hates each other. Steve Martin's character like just can't stand anything because like his job's on the line
right
all his kids hate him because he's being a shitty dad And then she walks in and like he's got all of this resentment to her as well. It's just like this implosion of walking into a house and you expect everything's going fine because that's how you left it and you thought that things were chill and then it's just not chill.
Although, like, to be fair, like, she calls earlier and she's like, let me talk to somebody. And he's like, oh, they're all doing their homework right now.
Oh, no, I
think
it's 100% his. It's not her fault. Just the same as Moshe's fault that they worship the golden calf.
Right.
I think it's like...
It's also crazy that they, like, haven't talked to their mom in how long. Yeah. Like,
it's also, like, been, like, what, 2 weeks?
Right.
And it's before mobile phones, really. Like, before, like if that movie was made now, all of those kids would have a mobile phone.
For sure.
But, I don't know. It's just
a
sad.
Mobile phone.
And then Oprah's supposed to come, and then the two people who show up from Oprah's team to, like, get the house ready.
Dax Shepard,
and I'm pretty sure it's Elon Gold, who is, I could have sworn it was him. Who's like a Jewish comedian and has one of my favorite like bits that I always quote. Yeah, he's in Chihuahua, doesn't he? Yeah. He has this bit where he talks about accents and about for certain accents, you just have to add in like a single letter at some point in the sentence or word to make that accent.
Mm.
And so he gives the example for Israelis, you have to put in an M in between every word because you say M.
Mm-hmm.
But his the best one, I do this all the time and it's like, it cracks me up. For Russians, you put a Y after every syllable. And the example he gives, and I quote this, I've been quoting this like my whole life because it's so, this traffic is unbelievable. I've been sitting here for 15 minutes. And like, that's the example he does. And I'm like, yeah, that does. And it's the only two sentences I can say in a Russian accent now. Because of this guy who's in less than a scene of Cheaper by the Dozen.
Great.
Nice Jewish boy. And then Moshe breaks the luchot and like every like the golden calf's destroyed, 3,000 people die, and it's just like absolute chaos. And that manifests in Cheaper by the Dozen.
Luchot is tablets and okay.
And then that manifests because Oprah's on her way. But as she's on her way and the house is all set up, like that's the moment where everything sort of implodes and the family's all fighting and like the parents are fighting. Everyone feels like shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dax Shepard calls up and he's like, nah, this isn't a happy family. This is the opposite of a happy family. And you're like, ooh.
Which it's like, you would think that they would like, no, I don't know. Like you have to realize, like, I don't know.
Also, you think Oprah cares that they're lying? Like Oprah hasn't built her entire thing on like,
right. Yeah. Like the idea that like you would in any world think that you could like make a family of 12 like perform the way that you want them to just shows like a deep misunderstanding of how children work. Like,
I was like, oh no, these kids are having a bad day. Oprah can't come anymore.
Yeah.
You ruined the integrity of Oprah's show.
Right. Anyway, and then the family comes together the same way that Moshe like fixes things with God.
Yeah, he
and everyone's
up for
happy
it.
In the name.
In the end.
Well, sorry, like, I was looking at the fact that I also didn't get this until the very end of the movie that their last name is Baker and there's a dozen of them.
The Baker's Dozen.
Yeah.
And that's compared in the Parsha because there are 13 attributes of mercy, otherwise known as
a Baker's Dozen.
Yes.
I get it.
Thank you. But you just
I can't believe you just made me say that stupid joke.
It's not a joke, it's the truth. But you skipped over the fact that, like, Moshe goes to bat. At the end of the day, like, the Jewish people have completely sinned, but Moshe still goes to bat for them.
Right.
With God. And the same way, they spent the entire movie being an absolute a-holes to this character, Mark, who was the only redheaded child with glasses.
Yeah.
And it's like a weird kid. He's obsessed with the frogs. And then they... Also, his frog's name is Beans. And the frog's mother's name was Pork.
Yeah.
Anyway. Troubling naming aside, the family has to come together to find Mark because he runs away from home because his frog dies.
And
as Oprah's coming, the frog dies,
mm-hmm.
and then he runs off. And then like no matter how much they all give him absolute shit all the time,
they still love him.
They still love him, and they go find him.
Right. I think also to me the biggest parallel is Nora, like Ashton Kutcher, being like, "You're going to prioritize your brother over me," and Nora being like, "Yeah."
Well, it's not even prioritizing. It's like, she's like, my like 10-year-old brother is missing. And he's like,
I'm
on
TV
right now. I'm on an ad on TV. He sucks in this movie. It's great.
But it's funny the part where he's like talking about, he's like, if they do anything to this face, this is the moneymaker. I actually, wow. Shout out to whoever said they wanted me to talk about Yarden more. I always tell that to Yarden whenever... whenever she goes out, I'm like, are you wearing sunscreen? And she's like, no. And I'm like, you're done. It's the moneymaker. Like, I won't like you anymore if you're not pretty.
It's really funny. I love this movie. It's so fun.
The last comment I have on the Parsha is just that, like, it is crazy that Aaron tries to lie to Moshe and God. What's to say, like, when he, like, he's like, oh, no, we threw the gold into the fire and this calf popped out. Like, as if Moshe and God are going to be like, oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Rashi talks about it a bit, I think.
Does he?
I don't think it's a lie. Like, well, there's also, like, Mefarshim go into overdrive defending Aaron.
Yeah.
In this parsha. Because
they have to.
Because they don't want him to be complicit. Also because he doesn't get punished, right? Right. Like, he doesn't get to see Israel, but, like, neither did Moshe and Miriam for different reasons, because they're part of that generation. Right. But he still is made Kohen Gadol. Like, he's still in charge of all of the ritual aspects. And I think one of the things that I remember reading in Little Midrash says...
I need to get a copy of this book.
Oh, it's so good. They should really sponsor us. Them and Chabad.org, the amount I talk about them, jeez. No, one of the things that Aaron tries to stall them, like, by gathering all of the gold and silver from various places. Right. He thinks that's going to take a long time, but then, like, all of these people give it to him. And he thinks that the making of it itself is going to take a really long time.
But then it doesn't.
But then it's, like, magic and, like, pops out.
Mm-hmm.
But that is...
I see.
Not shut.
Right, no, but it really bothers me. And it bothers me that, like, in this scenario, that there's, like, a very clear thing, like... I think Peshat is that he tries to lie his way out of it. Like, I see, like, the, like, mental gymnastics that the Mefarshim are trying to do and, like, why they want to do that. But then in Bamidbar 12, which we read so closely, that, like, it's not even clear, like, what Miriam and Aaron are doing wrong. And Miriam gets, what is it in Hebrew?
Tzara'at.
Yeah.
And,
or leprosy. And so, like, yeah.
Well, it's also, like, as much as the Mefarshim are, like, Aaron did everything right. And I think that you can also read into that without saying that, like, he didn't make it, by saying that he's just, like, giving into this mob mentality, because mobs can be really dangerous, right? And if they're all coming at him,
right,
you're going to try, like, and you want to get out of this alive, you're going to make the calf.
Totally. I totally agree that, like, it makes sense, like, what
it also, like,
he did.
Was it a really bad looking car? Like,
like, what do you mean?
Like, you melt down all of this gold. None of them are really artisans, right? They've been making bricks for, like, 210 years. It makes sense when Mefarshim are probably like, yeah, or when Aaron's like, yeah, it jumped out of the fire. And they're like, yeah, that is probably how it's made, because none of them have the
skills.
None of them have, like, none of them are goldsmiths. They can't just, like, you know, sculpt a cow out of gold that everyone's going to worship.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, a really, like, bad-looking gold figure.
Pretty bizarre.
But I will say that the text at the very end of chapter 32, Hashem says... Oh, no, it says, like, God sends a plague. Like, al asu et ha'egel asher asa Aaron. Like, because of what they did with the calf that Aaron made. Like, it's very explicit in that he had a physical hand in this.
Mm-hmm. But he doesn't get punished individually.
Well, it doesn't seem like he does.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what they list for why he...
Just like...
Didn't get into Israel.
What's her name? The... Allison?
Allison Stoner?
Allison Stoner.
Stoner? Allison Stoner?
Just like Allison doesn't get punished individually when she... It's clearly her idea to do the meat underwear. Right. And, like, obviously her dad knows that, but she doesn't get punished individually.
They all get punished. Yeah, because no one's...
What did you think of the lie detector technique where he's like, boop, 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 boop.
He knows his kids so well. Like,
again, that was the one moment of this movie that I liked, when he's like, I've harnessed that energy for good. Yeah. And Bonnie is like, that's not the issue here. Okay, so.
It's also so 2003 that, like, Nora, like, Piper Roberts, she's living with her boyfriend.
But then they're horrified by that.
And then she's not allowed to sleep in the same room as her boyfriend when she goes home.
Insane.
She's like 21, 22. She's 22 because she finished college. She's, like, got a job.
When I was 21, my parents would not let me
would not let my boyfriend stay in the house.
I have never taken a girlfriend home, so I don't know how my mom would react.
I think, I mean, now, obviously, Arden and I live together, so they can't really get around that. Although, technically, we stayed in a hotel when we were in Davis, so maybe they don't want us. But then my brother's partner has stayed over many times, and definitely he was younger when Sophia was allowed to stay over. Okay, so should we do some casting?
I've cast one, but I haven't cast the other.
So we're looking at Betzalel and Aholyov.
Exactly. His name is so hard. Aholyov.
Aholyov. I've literally never had to say it out loud before. So
I'll show you I'll paste. Are you on the Google Doc?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm posting the name in Hebrew with Nikud. And then I'll make it big so you don't have to. See, it's like Aholyov.
Aholyov.
It's because it's, Aholyov. It's two kamats, like, in a row.
Well, and it's a kamats with the two dots, which means it's always pronounced like a
kamats?
Whatever. Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. Aholyov. Aholyov.
No, but the accent wouldn't be on the...
Well, it depends.
Anyway, whatever. Depends no one cares. For the accent, no one cares. Yeah. We're casting Betzalel and his assistant.
Give me one more sec to like think.
Okay, well, I can say who I would cast. I think I wanted to.
What if you say the same person as me, then I'm gonna be sad. Okay, anyway, go.
I wanted to cast, like, I was thinking about Helena Bonham Carter because nice. Number one, because obviously I think this is a great moment to promote a woman. Nice. And I think she would be cool. Like, she has that kind of like cool, like artsy energy. But I think she's too sexy for this for this role.
You
like,
him as like absolute nerds.
Right. Well, I just see him as like somebody who's like so focused on their work, like so like
Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So then I was thinking Mahershala Ali because I think he's like very serious and like plays that type of role where I can just like imagine with him with. Like a pair of little glasses and like a soldering iron, nice. Like, you know.
Okay, so this is who I am casting.
And then as Aholyov?
Yeah.
Whatever. I was thinking Jared Leto, just because I think he kind of has that like weird energy. I feel like I might have cast him as something before, but again, his weird energy, I feel like, would contrast with Mahershala Ali as like a very like calm, focused.
Okay, so his
master craftsman. Okay.
So I'm thinking for Betzalel.
Oh, wait. Can I just say? Yes. Mahershala Ali was the star of, I mean, a bunch of things, but...
He was in...
He won a... Didn't he win an Academy Award for Moonlight?
He won for Moonlight, and I think he also won one for...
Green Book.
For Green Book.
Yeah.
He had a big couple of years, because it was only like 2 years apart.
Yeah. He is so handsome. I love him.
He's fantastic, and Jared Leto looks like... A piece of shit.
Yeah, Jared Leto has like long dark hair.
I hate that guy and, like, so much.
Yeah, he's got like he kind of so looks annoying. Like Jonathan Van Ness, but like shittier. Not wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, okay.
Without the love and happiness that Jonathan Van Ness just possesses with, like, the in his soul,
harassing his cast members and calling it method acting.
Yeah.
What a wanker. Anyway, okay. My Betzalel.
Mm-hmm.
We had this whole conversation earlier about like the creative energies and like, I just imagine this like sort of like crazy artist energy going on.
Mm-hmm.
And, but also someone who's like really, really charming, I think, because
mm-hmm.
later on in a different parsha, we learn that there's like a team
of artisans
who are like making all of these things, which makes sense, right? It's not just like two people making everything. And so someone who has to be like charming enough to like sort of command the respect of all of those people, but is also just like a crazy artist guy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Andrew Garfield.
Ah, I can see it.
Like the Tick, Tick, Boom, like style. Like he's like, his hair can be like nice and crazy, but it's still like very contained. And he's just like so lovely in everything he does. He's just like the most lovely person.
I can see it.
Andrew Garfield. And then for Aholyov, I'm thinking he needs like a very straight-laced partner.
Okay.
Like someone who like
you're kind of doing the opposite of what I did when I was like Mahershala Ali is like the focus, like get shit done, whatever. Yeah.
Because Betzalel, like, he's got the vision, but then he needs the guy who can sort of just like be like, okay, but what's the budget type thing?
Right.
Jesse Metcalf, who everyone here will probably know from John Tucker Must Die. The main guy, like, he's John Tucker.
Wow.
Mostly, again, I'm watching Desperate Housewives at the moment. Oh, and my he's God. In like the first season as like a 17-year-old. He's a gardener. And he's just got like the very like straight cut, like, you know, like very like the clean look.
Yeah.
And he's sort of the, I can imagine him like following him around, and like he'll have the technical skills of like handling a saw. And like doing all like the building things, whereas like Andrew Garfield sort of tells him what to do.
Right.
So that's my casting.
Right. Yeah. Great. Sounds good. Okay.
Easy peasy.
Anything else?
No.
Hello from the
past. I'm so sad that you didn't like Chupa Doesn't, but I'll get over it maybe.
It's okay.
Only time will tell if I will get over it.
I went in with a preconceived
Had you never seen it before now?
I had seen parts of it. I'm not sure if I had seen the whole movie or not.
You say that a lot. You're always like, oh,
I'm like, it. I was like familiar with it. Yeah. Like when I watched it, I was like, these things, like I remember like the meat scene. I remember Ashton Kutcher, but like maybe I like fell asleep at the end of it. Who knows?
Yeah.
I didn't care for it.
Again, crazy to me, but okay.
Okay. Bye everyone.